This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast. Today, I'd like to welcome John Murchison of Blackpoint Cyber. Hey, John, how's it going?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
You want to just give us a little bit about yourself and your company?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I run the business, but I consider myself a tech guy at heart. You know, I got started in this game kind of doing network engineering a long time ago. So more like this kind of Cisco route, and, you know, that kind of quickly led to getting into the intelligence community because, you know, I'm from upstate New York, came down here to go to school. And obviously in the Baltimore, D.C. area, the intelligence community is a big employer. So I ended up spending 12 years at a national security agency in cyber operations. You know, we call it CNO, right, which encompasses a lot. But, you know, really, we were on the kind of foreign intelligence collection side of the house. So, you know, did that for a bunch of years. And at one point I got injured bad enough that I couldn't really work on site for a while. And that's when I decided to launch what is Blackpoint Cyber today. You know, really, we primarily serve the MSP community. We're a cybersecurity software company. So we make our own detection platform. And then we deliver it as a managed detection and response kind of product and service at the end. So, yeah, that's pretty much the real condensed version of me and what we do.
Nice. Eric, anything you want to ask John over there?
I'm sure I'll have a barrage of questions to ask soon enough. Sorry, I'm a little heavily distracted today, so we may see a tame version of me. I don't know. We'll see.
That's no fun. We were just talking about the NetWalker and DarkSide stuff. What are your thoughts on them and how they've been operating? And what have you been seeing on your side of the world?
So obviously, you know, the Rikes and NetWalkers, the DarkSide guys. What we saw a couple of interesting things. First up, leading up to the election, right? Because remember last March, if you listen to any cybersecurity vendor and their marketing team, the move from home has caused attacks to go through the roof. And I was thinking the whole time, that's bullshit. We're not seeing that at all.
You're allowed to curse. Don't worry.
I'm allowed to curse. All right, good.
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Bomb away.
I won't go full me, which is really unedited, but we didn't really see a material change in that time. We did come June, July, start seeing some of the mass ransom activity uptick a bit. But really August, September, October, I can tell you, at least from our experience, I don't know if these trends hold. We saw a 2,000% increase in responses we had to do. That meant bad guys in, they have domain admin creds, they're trying to spread through the network, and they're trying to tee up to mass ransomware, you guys. And, you know, by and large, each of these groups, you know, they might have their own kind of, I would say, kind of maybe vertical they focus on, right? To hit people like the dark side guys are known as the big game hunt, right? So they're trying to look and understand like who has a lot of money, who can pay, and who can we really bring the pain to, you know, where they're going to pay because they want it to go away. We see that, but I would say by and large, what has it, from our experience in our SOC, so, you know, take it with the lens I'm looking at this through, what enabled most of these breaches from these groups that I saw were actually unpatched firewalls for those 2019 vulnerabilities and the I think it was SL vulnerability and that and the FortiGates and a whole bunch of other platforms that shared those libraries allowed the bad guys to essentially mass scan, identify, like we have a list of 50,000 IP addresses that are all vulnerable that was floating around the dark web by the bad guy groups. That means any of those companies, you could hit that appliance, get the clear text username and password of anyone, a VPN. That's where the COVID effect, I think, amped it up a bit because so many people were remote. The admins were VPNing in all the time. And so really the bad guy rolls in as domain admin. And then all the groups almost do the same thing once they're in. They're kind of testing creds or testing shared drive mounts and then just getting ready to push out. I mean, I saw a little thing like we did an incident response because that's something else we do as well. So it wasn't a customer of ours. They got hit by the dark side group about 3 months ago. They wanted $13.5 million ransom. And this was about let's just call it 600 employee company in the kind of, you know, energy sector, similar to Colonial. That was a really interesting one because they actually deployed some code to turn off the next gen AV EDR that was running. So they had a little jump up code exploit technique where they were able to defeat that stuff. But really everything before that one kind of on the box technique was the typical really noisy testing cred, seeing where they can spread and getting ready to pop this real quick. I mean, honestly, I think nation states, anyone who, once you're in a network, a lot of the hack looks the same because you have all the same problems you have to solve as a bad guy, John.
So when these guys were in there making noise before they shut off this vendor that is a next gen Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Why didn't they get caught?
Well, we weren't protecting them for one, because I think we would have caught them pretty easily. We've caught this group many times and stopped them. I don't think they got caught because, you know, like, I think, and I might be at odds with some other folks in the security community on this, so take it, you know, just take this as my personal opinion. I always felt like no matter how many exploits or code execution techniques, you know, backdoors, persistence techniques you have, we all love in the security world to nerd out on the tools and what did they use, what little technique in the weeds. But at the end of the day, you never have enough techniques to get a whole job done generally. And so much of hacking to me looks more like clever Windows domain administration, network engineering. So like a basic thing, you land in a network. I got to figure out, I'm at the guy, is he at home? Is he at his real corporate network? Next thing I might do is I might trace route out to Google. Let's just see how many hops, right? See where my ICMP traffic's filtered. It tells me like, oh, maybe there's a, you know, firewall device here. I might SSH the default gateway. See, do that even allow me? Is this Cisco shop? Do they have a banner on the Cisco device? That was an NSA recommendation I thought was really stupid, but it just tells you that, hey, you've landed in the right place. Good. Keep kicking ass. So I think if you're not looking for that gray area where techniques that are done all day long by IT professionals that are used by bad guys, you're going to only be successful if you catch the malicious tool set and not the operation itself. And so I think that's why.
I think it's much higher level than that, you know, where people are not doing simple fucking logging or monitoring the log. You know, I mean, yeah. There's so many things that are, you know, introduced into your network, you know, from an edge perspective, from a firewall, from IIS, from whatever. I mean, unless it is a Metasploit, which is a crafted deployment of a certain exploit, most of the time they are fuzzing the hell out of your network, your IIS server, Apache server, whatever it is, or, you know, they're brute forcing their way in. I mean, there's so much stuff out there that they will try to breach in that should, you know, I use the word a lot, you know, set your hair and your neighbor's hair on fire and run around like a chicken with your head cut off. Right. You know, I mean, there's plenty of that stuff out there. The simple fact that, you know, I'm working right now. That's why I'm kind of tame. I got a 350 user IR that I'm dealing with that, and I don't care. I'll call out ADRs all day long, but apparently Malwarebytes has an EDR now. That's complete and total shit. Hmm. The simple fact that you have to go into your EDR and set a policy to have an uninstall password for your frontline to visit your workstation makes me want to turn this table over.
Yeah.
That is stupid.
Yeah, it's tricky. And there's other like just little nuanced things. Like you guys are pros in IT, right? Like how often should you see someone try and mount a dollar sign share on every device and then that person be connected to the VPN? Does it happen? Absolutely. Do you want live eyes on it? Absolutely. And so, you know, I just think in general, you won't catch these guys unless you have a really blended mix of good, the best you can at the kind of anti-malware detection. Like it's kind of binary. It's either picking up on some techniques or a known bad file or it's not, but then also a good live view into what we call, they're always privileged and they're always high consequence activities. You know, one specific example I can think of is like, you know how a lot of the network monitoring products will use WMI remotely, right? So they auth against the box, they ask questions. Like we don't like that model, right? But because if you don't do that and you're letting the agent, which is probably running a system, do that better, and you're not littering creds everywhere, when the bad guy goes to remotely execute a process on the remote machine, it looks almost identical to those kind of network monitoring tools. So they're bad running them that way for two reasons. One, you're littering creds and leaving Kerberos tokens and crap everywhere. And two, it makes the environment a lot noisier. And so you have to now start tuning it out. And because anytime someone's authing to a box with a privileged account and asking a process to run remotely, that is important stuff. That is stuff like if you're actually good at MDR, that's the type of stuff you have to have some live eyes on.
See, that reminds me back. And I guess this, you know, you start kicking on some key points that derive my focus. So here comes full jackwagon mode. I remember back when before ConnectWise bought out LabTech and he was actually getting, you know, actual custom installations done on our servers. But there was a module in LabTech called Ignite. Mm-hmm. That would be a noisy SOB. And their de facto was, oh, well, let's just start disabling all this stuff. Then why have it in there to begin with? I mean, you're supposed to be developing an automation platform that creates a bunch of noise that apparently we have to pay attention to, but now we're going to disable it.
Yeah. There's, yeah, IT operations by default, you want maximum speed, maximum flexibility, and boy, some of those things run head into good security practices. It's tricky. But I think, again, back to my point, like I always felt, you know, maybe I'm biased because I was more of a network guy. I was not a software engineer, you know, and I feel like software engineers tend to be really good at the guys, you know, fuzzing an application, finding code execution techniques, figuring out how to persist. But I did always find like the IT guys who were kind of steeped in hacker tradecraft were better at moving around a network. And that's why I felt like when you're doing a good, so if you ask a dev to go catch a hacker, it's good. They're almost all malware focused is what I've seen over the years. And I feel like you really want that blended mix because the tool, the malicious tool set could be part of it. You know, the code execution technique can be part of it, but there's so much to that other part of the op that is really looks like IT. And that's where the good practitioners will be able to know the difference.
Speaking of that, I know DarkSide recently shut down or they were shut down.
Yeah.
Let's get a trigger, Eric, here. But have you seen any new incidents
by those guys
who use those techniques? Because I think they're just going to come back as a different.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what the heck happened. I read the same stuff you did. I don't have any inside baseball. I thought the timing was kind of clever on it happening right after their probably most famous attack ever. Whether it's DarkSide or any of these other groups, I mean, to me, they all behave the same when you're in the network. Just maybe DarkSide spent more time researching their targets, I would say. So I would not be surprised if they come back in some other form or fashion or different name. I mean, you know, I see like the Verizon breach report, you know, phishing is the main source of infections and all this, which I totally agree. Like there's a lot of that going on. The question is, through what lens? Is it like, phishing is a vector to get into a network is the number one way you get ransomware. Is that the number one way you get a malware detection with your AV? Because what we see is RDP and unpatched firewalls, at least in our SOC, are the number one way someone's in position attempting to mass ransom.
Did you guys see many incidents with ViaPulse Secure?
Tons and tons. In fact, that was the most prevalent.
Are you still seeing them? Because I'm willing to bet a lot of them are not patched.
Yes. We see them. We see them with all the vendors still.
Are you seeing any with the OWA?
Like through all the whole exchange thing?
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely, I mean, we just onboarded a trial customer and we're like, you know, that our SOC doesn't even look at trial customers, but one of our automated analytics was like, ah, this thing's owned, it's got web shells on it. So we're definitely seeing that. We didn't when it the first day they went wild. Like there was every box that was online was already popped and had some, now no one was leveraging the access. We saw about 2 weeks later, people attempted to leverage, well, they were trying. I mean, most of our customers, we had gotten them squared away in the first day or so of that stuff coming up. But we absolutely see all those techniques still happening.
Is that something you guys do when you see a owned box? If they are not a trial customer, you guys go in and remediate, or do you need to ask permission, or how does that work?
For us, like when the R, you know, the response side and MDR means everything to us, we actually mean it. Like we're killing processes, you know, taking machines offline, doing whatever. In a case like the exchange exploit, that one is kind of like, hey, we'll show you exactly what's removed. We just don't have the capability to do all those custom sort of remediate, you know, post breach remediation thing.
Why not? The FBI did.
They did. But we do. But yeah, I mean, we had all those knocked out like within 24 hours of it becoming public. So I think we were pretty on top of it, mostly because like there's a couple things, certain things, bad guys in, he's got creds, we're stopping him all day long. We just take action and we've actually had to push in our customer base. We had a big issue. Normally you onboard with us and then here's a response playbook you need to fill out, customer. Tell us the rules of engagement. We have some recommendations, but tell us what you want. I'll give you an example. Like, Shivan, maybe you're cool with me like popping Windows 7 or Windows 10 boxes, but don't touch my domain controllers, Blackpoint, right? Call me first. We had such an issue with customers not filling out the response playbook. Then they're on. So now we're kind of in like view only mode, right? And then I'm getting woke up in the middle of the night. My VP of threat ops was like, hey, this house is about to burn down and we can't get a hold of anyone at the customer site. What are we going to do? Of course, I did what I thought was the ethical thing, which was to not let their house burn down, and we stopped it. So we've moved. We've had to move to like default playbooks. Like, you're going to have to go out of your way to give us different rules of engagement just because we were being too handcuffed and it was happening almost weekly, where it's like, these guys are going to be mass ransomed. What do we do? Let it happen and say you didn't fill out the playbook, or do we save them? So it's been, you know, a couple little nuances there we've had to deal with.
Now, do you think that's related to the end client or the MSP?
MSP, yeah, because end client has no clue who, you know, most of the time that we're involved, unless we were part of the sales, you know, as a bigger client or something. So, yeah, it was always, you know, I sympathize with you guys a lot because not only are you running a crap ton of tools, you have a lot of networks to manage and a lot of users who are challenging to manage on a lot of networks with a lot of tools and a lot of vendors and billing and all that type of stuff. I think it's just purely like time.
I think, you know, I like to think Eric and I don't fall into that category only because we don't have the vast number of tools most of these MSPs are using. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, I think we vet our tools pretty well and make sure they're set up correctly.
Yeah. Number one, are you pitching a single pane of glass? Yes. All right. See you later.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It really feels good to say, hey, I maybe misinvested and bought too many IT security tools and now I'm not looking. Now I got a compliance thing. Now I got to get a single pane of glass log dumpster and I'm going to bring it all together. That feels good. Right. But it doesn't work very well in practice, to your point, Eric. So that's call that the jazz hands of cybersecurity.
Yeah, because, so, I mean, you pop that friggin' thing and you're like jazz hands, like, yeah, I got in everywhere. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Well, and it's really like, okay, now it's in here. So, okay, what's the next step? I got 10,000 logs I'm trying to correlate all together. Now I got to pick, which am I jumping into EDR tool? Now I got to log into that, you know, and then if you want to orchestrate, now I got to put an orchestration tool on top. Then the APIs change. And what happens, we've seen this over and over again. It's usually the larger companies that are trying to, you know, align their cyber, you know, security set up with some framework. They got the next gen of EDR, they have the DNS tool, they have the firewall, they got the mail filtering tool, they got all these tools, and then they bring it into a SIEM and they realize no one's actually looking at the data, they can't manage it. So then they need a SIEM consulting company. And then they're like, oh, we need automation because that's how you're going to get out of this jam. And then they go buy a SOAR tool, which is like a if this, then that, you know, workflow type tool. And what I found is they inevitably, I'm sure there's some that have pulled it off just because they have the resolve to stay with it and spend the money. But what I find is they spend more time building the damn mousetrap and tweaking the mousetrap than catching mice. And that's why it's cool to hear you guys saying you use less tools, because we're a huge believer in a much more lean but efficient and effective stack. It costs a good sold's better. You guys make more profit and it works better. You're not getting useless crap thrown at you. And that's a big issue we see a lot.
Are you guys doing anything with cloud services, like bringing in 365 logs?
We do have a 365 offering right now. In fact, we had an event with someone very close in our orbit who turned out to be a customer Friday night. And my deputy in SOC was in town from Florida. And so we were all sitting by the fire, the VP and director and me, when I get a call, you know, from someone on my board. And yeah, we saved them for an event with that on Friday nights.
How old is your 365 product? Because I think when we spoke the last time, it was either in dev or not really released.
Yeah, we're leveraging some partner technology for that one. So it's been around for a while, but we've heavily modified a lot of, like, what actually caught this kind of breach on the back end was actually another analytic we ran that was bouncing logins off known bad proxy addresses and cloud addresses. So it wasn't something actually in that kind of that capability there. So we'll be continuing to invest heavily in that one. In fact, I just hired another developer, starts in a week, who's going to be focusing more on that. Because we see, like, if I take a step back and look at kind of the product ecosystem, like, so there's MDR, that's our normal thing, that's Snap Defense, that's kind of handles Azure environments, like the, you know, hosted servers and on-prem really well. So those hybrid environments well. Then the next bundle's kind of check the box stuff, right? Logging, compliance, file integrity monitoring, all that. That's our new product Logic, which you'll see a public announcement in like 2 weeks on that one. So that's kind of like help make the auditors go away and be comfortable you got your crap together. The third bundle is cloud. So we're started with 365, but I think you'll watch us go hit Amazon and other cloud services, because one of the areas, and we don't see a ton of it in MSP, but, you know, kind of if you're running some of your infrastructure in like AWS or using EC2 instances, like I always get freaked out when I see companies where there's like one admin, he's the only guy I can log in, or, you know, they don't realize like the eggs are really kind of all in one basket if that account gets taken over. And so I think, you know, a lot of these cloud services, if you ask me, are less like point and shoot, stop a active hacker and process like you would in sitting in a, like a real environment, like a machine or, you know, server. They're more like pulling hygiene to the front and like smacking the user across the face to enable it, and then alerting when any rules hit around there, like, you know, just like simple things. Like we get an alert right when an email forwarding rule's added. Could be totally legitimate and fine, but it's definitely stuff you gotta watch.
Now, are you seeing more breaches or a compromise of 365 in the last few months than you did last year?
For sure. For sure. And it's always this, there's like two main vectors we're seeing, and a third one I'm worried about that I'll tell you about. One, no MFA. I mean, you have to have your head examined in 2021 if you're not turning this stuff on by default.
But the client doesn't want it. It's too complicated. We can't do it.
I think this is the case where it's kind of like the doctor, you know, you guys, the best MSPs I've seen have a security that have been offering, and that's the offering. And it's like client, like, This is how it works. You know, you don't really get to a la carte pick, you know, if you want seatbelts in your car. And so I think those models work really well. And then I would say, so just people getting tricked. Hey, I just shared a OneDrive document, log in. We watch them. They try logging in like five times with the creds. It's not working. The bad guys get the cred every time. And then the bad guys log in. So we see that. That's probably the most common. The one I've seen more lately is SMTP. Now this is kind of nerdy and in the weeds, but SMTP authentication is on by default and it's single factor. And so what we find is folks are getting creds because, and we've noticed some of the groups doing it seem to be like those kind of old school, you know, kind of African email scammer guys are the ones that we've seen some of this come from. I'm sure everyone's doing it, but, and then what happens there is I think they're able to off single factor. Now they're sending emails like they're, you know, whoever they want to be in the org. And they use that as their kind of, now I'm sending an email as if I'm John and I'm socially engineering folks into getting banking information and stuff like that. So they're clearly after to use that little bit of access to have a better, more believable social engineering operation.
So to talk on that, are you getting to a spot inside of your organization where you're going to start making a recommendation or at least alerting, you know, users, your clients against the compliance manager in Microsoft 365 to whatever framework you want to. It's like, hey, Mr. Customer, you know, or MSP, you got six tenants over here that are so far away from 871 that I could drive 10 Mack trucks through this. You want to come over here and shore this thing up, or, you know, you offer a service to actually do that for them type stuff, or?
Yeah, we're actually, I don't know if it's a little too early to announce this. One of the things, We're working some M&A at the moment, you know, to bring, you know, some more capabilities in. One of the positions I want to create out of this is going to be a compliance concierge, really just to help a lot of, you know, if you read any of these compliance frameworks, there's no one in the world compliant with them. If you ask me, they're crazy. They contradict themselves half the times, and people kind of need. So we look at everything as what is the spirit and the intent of this PCI requirement or recommendation. And then we try best to kind of counsel people separately, specific to your question on 365 in the onboarding with this product. There are a bunch of like that hygiene stuff that gets pulled to the surface. Now we only see that tenant, right? We don't see their other customers. Mm-hmm. So that is part of it. I will say, Eric, I'd love to know your guys' like feedback. We have a massive issue still with RDP open to the internet. I mean, mm-hmm. hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And we send notes nonstop. We call, we do everything. We can't seem to change behavior. I'm joking. We should start charging $1,000 a month for that service to change the behavior, because it is literally, you're just playing with fire at that point. And we worry, you know, someone pops that server, they're domain admin already. Boy, your time between like that going really sideways could be so fast. Maybe even we don't get our response. I mean, it hasn't happened to us yet, but maybe we don't get our response in time. And so that is a huge, huge issue.
It is. And You know, I make the, you know, comments a little jokingly, but, you know, until they actually get popped, the clients are not going to give a shit.
I know. The problem is they're looking at us to protect them. I'm like, I'm not sure I can protect you with your front door open. Like, you know, like, I mean, we have so far, but I worry we take our success rate really serious.
I mean, MSPs have got to get to a point where they're like, look, either we change or you find a new fucking partner.
The problem there is most MSPs are afraid to walk away from any type of money, no matter what the end liability is going to be for them. Or they just do not have the talent in-house to close an RDP port, as bad as that sounds.
We saw an interesting one the other day where it was actually, so RDP wasn't open. It was like a VPN client running on a server. I don't remember the brand, otherwise I'd mention it. And that one got exploited. Like, there's a code execution technique, no auth. And so that was another new one. You know, again, I think the real, my other kind of, I guess, advice, you know, I remember when I started network engineering, the DMZ was like the thing, right? You know, that was old, really old school. But to me today, besides maybe a VPN ports, there should be nothing open externally on your firewalls. And we need to move more towards, even the VPN crap isn't open. You're more cloud brokering, like a zero trust, you know, cloud brokered access into the environment where you can really control the applications. Because this inevitably, like, here's a real world example. 4,000 endpoint customer of ours. We rolled out, I don't know, 2 years ago on them. They had the Iranians in there, like an actual APT, real nation state tool that we got a hold of, and it could do a lot of neat things. And a ransomware group getting ready to ransom them. Root cause was a misconfigured DMZ firewall rule. It's just, it opens up too many, there's too many moving parts there where people just screw it up, or they open something that was supposed to be for like an hour just to get something working. I know how that works. We've all done it. And then they forget about it. Why external vulnerability scanning, I argue, is almost more important than internal.
Are you guys, do you guys do external scans?
We have it built into our partner portal for free. So if like you're a customer, you get it. It's, you know, full cards on the table. We just hit the Shodan.io API and that does it. And I don't think that's the, Shodan's cool, but as far as a, like a vulnerability scanner, I think we're probably going to swap it with something a little bit more robust.
You going to give us Nessus for a cheaper price?
Yeah, well, that's my, we've been testing all the, obviously, you know, we're based out of Columbia, Ellicott City, and the Tenable guys are right down the street, and we know their founders well, so they're good folks over there. So who knows what we'll use? But right now you can see if you have any CVEs and open ports, and in fact, we built a thing you can do it for your prospects too, in the portal. You know, if you have a new customer and you want to walk in, be like, listen, you got Swiss cheese here. My experience, like, I'd rather be running like Nmap or Nessus personally. I'd trust the results. Right. It wasn't missing something.
I saw recently that a lot of the ransomware groups, once a 0 day is announced, the first thing they do is get onto a tool like Shodan and start scanning for them.
Every hacker in the world gets on a tool like Shodan to start. Hell yeah.
How do you guys mitigate that? Is there a way to mitigate that when the CVE gets announced and the scans are coming in on your client machines? Or external servers?
Yeah, so usually when those things come out, the first thing we're doing is checking our own customer base, you know, just to see who's there. Like, it was interesting. We had we did a response on a financial firm that had an unpatched, I think, Pulse Secure. They got popped. And so it was all good. They were really happy. We closed down. We knew it came through that vector. The cool part was, so we didn't have like full scans of every single one, because, you know, every single one's boundary stuff. But if it's something our agent's running on, you know, we'll definitely look at it. You know, we're just kind of a line where a firewall is a little bit trickier. You know, all you got is really a vulnerability scan, just to know if it's patched and that vulnerable service is running. But then we got the list of 50,000 IPs from the dark web from some of the hacker groups online. And this IP was in there. So it was actually kind of, it was clear, like, that list was going around. The bad guys were actioning it, which was kind of neat. Generally, though, I would say, by and large, exploits are bad. They go quick. You know, we get the comms out and, you know, we just make sure there aren't any crazy issues. But at the end of the day, our whole model of what we do assumes someone got in one way or another. It was exploit, Edward Snowden, a bad guy, you know, an insider. Like, we don't really care. It's more about limiting that really bad damage. So I'm always willing to give up like one boundary device or one thing here, you know, as long as the whole company doesn't get taken down, as long as you can catch those follow on, you know, kind of the rest of the op, I think that's one of the things many times that separates nation states from criminal groups is the method of initial access is more clever. And there's a lot more techniques because, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. This is just, you know, fundamentals. When you get in a network, you still got to figure out where you are, if your credits are good, what other services are running. You know, you don't just magically see other subnets. You know, fundamentals of networking 101. It's one of my questions I asked Sal Sitchers when I interview him. Like, are broadcasts passed by default between subnets? No one's answered it right yet. So it's always like a, you know, does basics matter in this game?
Have you guys seen a lot of repeat incidents? Meaning,
no.
Someone got popped. An IR was done, not necessarily by you guys, and then they get popped again, and it lands in your arms, and you have to deal with it. And it was probably because the first IR didn't clean it up effectively.
Boy, I can't say that I've seen that, but I also can't say we would know that something had happened in the past. I will say there's one very specific case, and this is kind of out of them as some larger company, and these guys were thinking about onboarding us as a customer. They got popped by the NetWalker group during that deliberation time. This was because of the unpatched firewall. So we found that right away. And then the first thing we did is get our product rolled out. Some other IR firms use us as like the first in just because it makes a map and we see all the accounts and everything that's being used. And so in that case, we found out how they got in. We got it patched. Unfortunately, they had to pay a ransom because they were kind of screwed at that point. But we got them a forensics firm that we trust to help consult and get them back up and running. And then, okay, all is good. 2 weeks later, they're all back up and running and we're doing our MDR thing. We had another major attempt. That was the first second bite of the apple I had seen in our base. Now, what we don't know, was it the same group? Because their tradecraft looks the same through most of these groups. So it's kind of hard to tell, like, you can't really tell the C dollar sign amount looks like different than the other one, you know? But what the root cause of this one was, we asked them, did you reset every password in your domain and for the VPN? Yes, they did not, because the bad guys came in with a previous username and password and just VPN. And so what we don't know, sometimes I have no direct evidence to, so I want to be really clear, but I think some of these criminal groups will sell off like passwords and IPs to other ones. And it could have been another group that came in and hit them again, but that would have been bad because we helped them get out of the jam. We rolled out. And if we missed, obviously that would have been hyper embarrassing. But we stopped it. But that was the one time I've seen what felt like someone coming back to get more. I just can't say it was the same group.
Are you guys seeing a lot of movement from Abaddon, that relatively new group that's moving around? They're pretty active, I'd say, in Asia, Europe right now, and they're touching in on the US.
I was going to say I hadn't heard of them yet, so I guess not.
I'll send you the Onion link offline.
Okay, cool. So I think the answer is no, but I'm not sure. A lot of times we know which group's doing what. I mean, the attribution part of it usually comes when that ransom message is on the screen. And so we tend to never see that because we're stopping it before. We're usually catching it in that phase when they're just trying to figure out is their access good or their cred's good. And that's when we're smoking them and locking things down generally. So we have a really hard time with attribution just because there's just not enough. You know, they're using Angry IP scanner or, you know, net scanner or something like that. It's just benign stuff at them.
How are you guys figuring out if the firewalls are unpatched or have vulnerabilities on them?
Well, usually this vulnerability scan immediately and port scan, just see if it's RDP or this. And then the other thing is you can always tell, like we do all this like live network mapping, right? We're using ARPs, IP configs. If we have, you know, kind of integration with Meraki turned on, we see all their VLANs. And it's usually very clear when it's a VPN based, right? They look different than the other ones. So that's usually our first clue. When we didn't see like, you know, something that seem to get spawned from, you know, user clicking on an email or opening a Word doc that launched some macros or something, when it's like immediately a privileged account is just starting to RDP to critical servers, or this VPN account is lighting up, you know, share drives, that is usually a good indicator to us that it came through kind of a boundary appliance of some sort. That's a good question. No one's ever asked me that one before. That one actually matters.
It does, really, because, you know, it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those low-hanging fruits that people overlook all the time.
So, John, here's what the Avions, just so you know, if you're going into an IR situation, these guys are known, like she was saying, was mostly in the UK, things of that nature. But their fame, the claim is if you don't start paying them, they're going to start DDoSing your entire network afterwards.
These are the guys who actually we're just talking about them now because they're really hammering, aren't they hammering Central American, South American banks really bad?
Yep.
We, Javier, you know, who runs Startups, and Will, he's another ex-NSA guy like me, we were sitting around the fire talking about these groups on Friday night to like 2 a.m. that are targeting a lot of the Mexican banks, actually.
They seem to want to operate everywhere but in the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, they're coming
probably
in.
Smart.
You can see, you know, 5 days are counting down for these guys. These guys are about to get released. There's a ton coming up.
Oh, my gosh.
Like I said, I'll share the Onion Week with you offline.
Unbelievable. You
know, I don't want to publicly put it out there and just whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's it's hard enough to run a business and make it successful and do all those things. And you have these assholes, you know, coming in to make it worse. So, you know, the worst part about it, like this, I'm definitely going to probably get flamed by some in the security community. The worst part of it, I have not seen a tool yet from a criminal group that wasn't an open source pen testing involved in the op. So we do all this stuff for the interest of good. We release all these tools, yet they're continually used by bad guys. It's kind of interesting. I know we need to do this stuff, but it's always kind of strikes me as, man, if you didn't have all those open source pen testing tools and no cryptocurrencies, it'd be kind of hard for them to get paid.
I think they'd figure out a way to get it done.
I think too, but it just makes it so easy for so many barrier of entries lower.
Exactly.
So here's, and this really goes back to the whole login. This really goes back to, you know, securing up your own stack. So we definitely have a problem here in the United States where guys like us are few and far between to quote unquote, you know, be the unicorn to be able to go in there and actively stop threats, remediate against threats, blah, blah, blah. But it's definitely a shortcoming in supply. So I'm grateful to those that are, you know, releasing the tools, but I do see where it's a double-edged sword where even though these things are being released, you know, I'll go through and start looking at them and seeing if I can use them on my own. But that's a shore up my situation. But there's a ton of people out there that really don't shore up their own. And that's kind of where right. I really want to get to on the next one, because I know we're getting a little bit short on time. But to talk about security and compliancy, mm-hmm. you know, this has been something that, you know, a lot of people have been going out and, you know, really touting what Joe Biden has done about his whole executive order. Have you read up on this thing yet?
I read some of it, and obviously I'm losing one of our most excellent board members because Joe Biden just hired him to be the national cyber director, the first one.
Good. When he gets there, can he smack him, please?
I know. So
you know the Secret Service is going to hear that and come pay you a visit.
Right? My address is 123 Sesame Street.
Yeah. I can tell you, though, Chris Inglis, I don't think they could have picked anyone more qualified. In my opinion, others might disagree. He was the most respected civilian leader I've ever seen at NSA. He's a stud and he knows the stuff. It's a really challenging, I have a real love hate relationship with compliance frameworks because, you know, I look at it this way, like, does the adversary give a goddamn if you are SOC 2 compliant, or did they care that you missed patching that Pulse Secure thing by a day? Right. And so now they're good frameworks to try and level up the maturity, but they're written so obtuse that it's hard to even make sense. I'll give you a perfect example. We went round and round engineering this file integrity monitoring. It's mandated in like all these compliance frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
I see almost nobody do it ever. And the real answer is like, so I always go back to what was the spirit, my interpretation of the spirit of why someone wrote FIM and made it in confusing language in a compliance framework. It's because like healthcare company gets popped or defense contractor gets popped and they want to know what files were stolen. Right. I think that was really kind of it. And what and so what do you ever see crystal clear guidance from the government on like, hey, for example, maybe these are the default directories you would always want to watch. And here are some recommendations of, you know, kind of a specific directory you need to roll out as a policy. I'll give you a real world example. I'm a radiology firm and I'm a radiologist and I'm bringing images down from patients and patient records and I'm analyzing them on my computer. to me, then the spirit of FIM, I'd probably want to monitor System 32. So that's something our new product does by default. I'd probably want to monitor any user on the box. It's like documents, desktop, places where real files sit that, you know, humans use. And then for an org, I would probably want that location where that specific application we've deployed across an enterprise stores that sensitive data. But you never get that layman's, you know, description from these compliance frameworks. So people just go check the box and we collect tons of logs and we create a whole bunch of noise and no one ever looks at it. And it's, I just wish there was some way to make, and that's our attempt with having MDRs or no BS stop a hacker. And this other thing is a check a box where we store the logs and we have it all. I think the government needs to do a lot better in pragmatic, practical recommendations instead of these, you know, really kind of confusingly worded compliance, you know, decrees.
Do you think there's anything in that executive order in terms of what needs to be done to actually secure systems that hasn't been codified somewhere else for the government? Because it seems just to be a complete rehashing of existing standards that should have been in place anyway.
I'll take that one a little further, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of executive orders where a bunch of people are going to go fucking sit in a corner and look at a bunch of shit and then supposedly write back, oh, we did these things. NIST is supposed to come up with a framework and then report back in 180 days. Well, motherfucker, they've already got 7 damn frameworks. Pick one.
A lot.
You know, you have 90 or 6 months to implement MFA. How about 6 fucking minutes?
Yeah.
How about that for a change?
I guess that's the thing. There needs to be these compliance frameworks. I don't know who writes them. It's clearly not cybersecurity guys, not real ones.
It's the company selling the training and the setup of the documentation.
Because like some of them, I read it 3 times. Like, what in the hell are they trying? Like, what is the point of this?
And the great thing about it is, to interrupt you, because this is the parts where I really get triggered at. You know, if you go in there and look, depends on what crack you're smoking that day and who you're talking to. There's people who actually claim that this thing is going to impact MSPs. There's not a verbiage in there that applies to the public sector. So this would not have fixed SolarWinds or stopped it. It would not have fixed or stopped Colonial Pipeline or any damn thing other. It only applies to government entities and those who have a government contract or federal contract.
We've had a lot of internal discussions about, you know, just because we think about the stuff we came out of the government, you know, and it's like, to me, are there parts of the government where we have foreign nation states trying to hack them, steal data, hook them, disrupt them, make their life terrible? Yes. But the real battlefield seems to be against corporate America by criminal groups predominantly, and then some intellectual property theft, you know. And the government, the way they threat hunt still today to me is like so old school. It's unbelievable. It's, you know. And I think in all these compliance frameworks, if you read them, they would lead you down to the only tool I should ever run is a SIEM. You know, I should pump everything into that. And they create so much work. And it's like, maybe go pick the last 10 really major notable breaches, like from big companies. I'm willing to bet they had an outsourced SIEM as a service. How'd that work for you?
I had an outsourced SOC and SIEM as a service that Eric was banging on the doors, and to this day they never figured it out. So
yeah,
I get it. He loves that story.
Yeah, that's the you know, that's just kind of that weird mix. But I don't know the right answer. I think it's a really hard problem, but we somehow need like, you know, some just pragmatic like examples, like an exemplar. So here's a fictitious company. This is the compliance firm. These are the types of technologies, you know, name a vendors that they rolled out and how. That would be a good, you know, maybe like here's a good example of compliance, medium and crappy example of it. And it would just be kind of cool to see the government lead that way, because they need to be doing that. And then they need to be focused on engaging those bad guys and getting them shut down as fast as they can, treat them more like our counterterrorism operations, because they're just operating with impunity.
Well, it's hard to get those guys, right? If they're operating in countries we have zero jurisdiction and potential reach into.
I would say yes and no. I think, put it this way, if we made a conscious effort, my opinion, Shiva, it's like the United States government go solve that problem, I think it'd make a serious dent. We might not have legal jurisdiction, but there's a whole nother national security arm of our government, you know, this overseas operations. And I think,
but I think the problem is here, we look at it as a legal remedy, or we're looking for a legal remedy I guess, a counterterrorism incident when you really think about it, right? So maybe you're right. Put it into that category and let that just group of guys go after it.
They are like just ruining people's livelihoods. They're taking out hospitals. Like, it is not to mention stealing just massive amounts of money. It's such a huge issue. And I guess selfishly, it keeps companies like us in business, right? But at the end of the day, no matter what they do, there's always going to be enough, I think, for folks like us.
We'll figure it out. I mean, we'll still be able to eat dinner.
But I still want them to make a meaningful dent, because it's, you know, when you combine that with, you know, some of like the purposeful built, you know, intelligence agency driven disinformation campaigns that are being pushed on the US all the time. I mean, that is an active part of foreign intelligence. So they dedicate tons of people to doing that. Because when you can't agree on what, you know, something is a fact or not a fact anymore, your systems are getting attacked and disrupted. A lot of the way we work in the West is based on like a mutually understanding of some common facts. You know, when you can't trust your data, and then your systems, you lose continuity of operations from a ransom event. I mean, it's a pretty gnarly, I look at it, it's an economic and social weapon.
Yeah, it's like the point where, you know, when I'm going into stuff, even, you know, in a non-IR, you know, we got a prospect that we're dealing with right now. And I realized I am getting to the point, and I think a lot of InfoSec is, I started talking to a lot of them where we start getting really jaded, where we just go into a network and we're just like, this whole entire thing is fucked until proven otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just like, crap.
Easy to get jaded in this one.
A lot of these ransomware events, I think, yes, money is an important factor to it, but it's beating down the resolve of the American people. Mm-hmm. It's showing you, say, hey, you're not protected. You're not safe anywhere, and your government's not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And as far as going after corporate America, with the way federal procurement goes, you want to get into the government, just breach their supply chain, which is corporate America, who's going to do everything for the cheapest price possible.
It is. I mean, you just nailed the nuance and nation state activity that I think is really important. Actually, something I, you know, especially if a lot of MSPs are going to listen to this, I would love to get it out there. It is. So first off, I think most people will agree, and speak up if you disagree, that any network connected to the internet is probably a viable target for a criminal group, right? Because they'll, you know, if they think they can ransom, they don't care who you are. On the nation state side, from an espionage or intellectual property theft, there are types of companies that I think will generate a lot more interest than other types. And so if in MSPs, I will say they serve tons of small boutique defense contractors who make some really important widget that goes into a missile or an airplane or something up the supply chain. I can promise you the bad guys will systematically, if their job is to get, you know, intel and designs on a new weapon or space part, they will systematically try and break down and make a whole network analysis of every company involved in the supply chain. Instead of, let's say it was Northrop that was the head of the product, instead of maybe going right after them, they're going to go hit all these mom and pops that are served by MSPs down the supply chain. We had a real world case of that. And this is a customer that I'm not even going to say what they made, but they made a part, you know, that was on an aerial platform of some sort. And
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And yeah. Right.
I know of a similar situation.
Okay. And what was kind of interesting in this one is bad guys, I think, came in, actually, this is a long time ago, I think it came in through either stolen VPN creds or an unpatched firewall. It's one of those. So again, hard one, like those are ones where we're really spun up because there's such a short time. But in this case, they immediately did the normal net commands interrogating the domain controller, of course, and not to throw shade on the AV EDRs, because those have caused a lot of this tradecraft.
Webroot does not count as an EDR.
I didn't name any names, but this was more of a like, you know, kind of a newer company EDR, you know, like you'd expect. And no alerts, but not surprising, because they hadn't really done anything. There was no malware yet involved. So they interrogated the domain, but they went immediately to the CNC machine. So we stopped them right away. But I know damn well what they're after. That is where you get the AutoCAD files for the production part.
On a legacy system.
That in bodies, intellectual property theft, 101 via cyber means. And so, you know, that was a good, we felt good about stopping that one, but I'm sure they're going to get targeted a ton of times. I mean, nation states, that's the other thing. They only have to, like, they don't stop. They just, every day you wake up and your job is do X.
If you take solar winds from a 30,000 foot view and what happened to them, you know, what you said very much makes exact sense. You know, it really drives home to that. They will take the time to map out your entire network and get to the bottom of whatever they're after to get that information. We've got the social network. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question for you, John. You came from the government space, and I don't know if you can talk about this. All of our compliance sets are public knowledge.
Yeah.
If you want to do business with the defense industry or DOD, you can go onto a website and see exactly what checkboxes you need to check. Is that the same with the Chinese and the Russians?
Boy, I don't know the answer to that. Actually, I don't know if they have compliance frameworks, to be honest with you.
I'm sure they have some kind of security framework that says, you know, you go to Siberia if you do this, you go to the Gulag if you do that. But my question is more based on how easily accessible is that information to someone who wants to carry out OSINT operations or anything to figure out how to breach a supply chain, whereas, you know, we're bare to the internet with our compliances.
Yeah. No, that's a really good question. I can't say I've ever used like a kind of compliance capability in targeting, you know, as far as to narrow in, but you raise a really good point. I'll say, like, there's a couple things that always stand out to me is, I don't remember, it was Eric that said it, that the nation states will take time to systematically map out your network. To me, it's mapping the network out, mapping the exact tools that are used. So, you know, they will focus on procurement, where you buy your stuff from. And then the third part is the social network. So they will map out the org structure and where their online or, you know, touch points are, where you can get open source intelligence. You know, for me, like, when you're chasing bad guys who don't want to be found and don't have formal companies, like, they don't have any of this stuff. It's way easier to attack a real company with a well-engineered network, if you ask me. And because they have a reason to communicate with the outside world. So I used to have a presentation I give sometimes and said, MSP, I want you to think of you and your customers, like, think in three buckets, like those that create data, you know, that a bad guy might want to steal. So your intellectual property creators, those that control the environment. So it's UIT. And then those that have a reason to communicate with the outside world, sales, marketing, you know, finance, right? That's how a bad guy, many times, I think a sophisticated adversary will think about you. And then think about what you're putting online. So instead of maybe going to a compliance framework where I'd say, oh, they require the file integrity monitoring, I better not like touch this certain directory or something. I would be more I'd be more interested if I were a bad guy in the resumes of some of their employees, because IT guys write the tools they use on their resume. And the tools they use are what I would expect to run into when you get into the environment. That's the type of stuff you think about, right? You know, so that's where, when I see on LinkedIn, hey, I'm the head of Windows, I'm head Windows domain administrator for MSP XYZ. We run 2008 server, 2012, you know, Kaseya or whatever for our, kind of RMM tool. You know, they start listing all that down, and that's the stuff I want to counsel them. Like, guys, first off, that's private information, I think. And two, there's no need for that to be on the internet. So it's free to do a little audit and maybe have a policy on your social media, so you're not telling the bad guys what you're running. It's another reason, like, I know we have, you know, some customers that talk publicly about us, but we don't try to make a huge habit of dragging around every notable customer to say they're using Blackpoint, because all I'm just doing is telling the bad guys because we did a response, it was running two AVs. And this is a Swiss cheese network. So the bad guys had free, they could come in and out like the firewall. There's so many holes. There's domain controllers they didn't even know about. We stopped wave one because they tried to hit every server, right? And in this particular, you know, municipality. And we stopped it. 2 hours later, wave two came back. But you know which two commands we saw them attempting to execute? To defeat the two AVs, because they thought that's who it was. And so I like preserving a little bit of the element of surprise on the response side. I think all those lessons, that whole, was it the combined arms sort of dilemma that, you know, the Marine Corps really honed after, you know, World War II and beyond, is a really, all those lessons learned directly apply to offensive or defensive cyber operations in my
opinion. What's your take or your, I mean, your policy for your employees on social media? For me, they're not allowed to say, to post that they work here.
Our policies are more geared on, you can't talk about the type of stuff we're running, just because everyone's on LinkedIn, you know, so you're going to find them.
Even the fakes. There.
Huh?
Even the fakes.
The fakes. Yeah, probably.
I found someone tried to add me who runs cybersecurity conferences in the UK, and he has a striking resemblance to Tom Colicchio from Top Chef.
Oh, weird.
And when you take his picture and you do a reverse image search, it only brings up Tom Colicchio.
That's hilarious.
I was on Clubhouse in a cybersecurity AMA last week, and there was an attorney in there from the State Risk Board of Massachusetts. Didn't sound like an attorney, but that their measured approach and how they speak, profile littered with typos. Took a screenshot, sent it to her actual work email address in Massachusetts.
Right.
She's like, yeah, no, that's not me. I'm like, well, you should probably take care of that.
Wow. Yeah, I will say I'm a little bit appalled at some of the groups. When I see groups on LinkedIn of former intelligence professionals, you know, or so that one, okay, it's former. The one that really gets me is the one I saw, one that was cybersecurity professionals for critical infrastructure. And so like, if you wanted like one location, and there was like 1600 members or something crazy last time I looked. I mean, talk about a collection of one human assets to go work on, develop if you're a foreign nation state adversary intelligence org, and two, who probably has like highly privileged keys to the kingdom in those environments. Well, there you go. You don't have to look very far because they just told you, and there's a whole collection of them. And that's how you can infiltrate the social circle. You know, and this type of shit is just like, you know, unfortunately, in our industry, as you guys know, there are very, very, very few cybersecurity professionals that have ever actually been the bad guy for a living, because it's illegal, right? Unless you work for the government or something like that. And so there's, I think there's just that a little kind of slice of knowledge that's missing on the pragmatic targeting side, because if you've never targeted someone or an organization before, you just don't think of certain things like that would probably be a bad idea to make a collection of the people and a list of everyone who's responsible for securing major utilities and all this other stuff.
You know, everyone wants to be heard these days, right? So that they're joining those groups like it's going out of style.
I mean, it took me forever to ever say it was ex-NSA, to be honest with you. But I mean, at some point, it'll be the worst kept secret in the world. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, if we ever get back around to having Cokes and beer and all that stuff, I'll tell you about some of my exploits, and I'll be one other person you'll know that was a bad person before they went good.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, I knew the first time we met, the questions you're asking was coming from experience. So it made it easy to say. Cool. Good. We can have an honest conversation. I'm not going to be asked about how our sweet AI machine learning is solving all of hacking's problems.
I think it just got triggered in so many different ways.
Yeah. Oh, AI is the easiest way to trigger either one of us, because it's just
same. I love it where it works.
Misapplied. But
let's not claim, you know, it's magic, because 90% of these next gen AI alerts that come into our SOC, because we have tons of integrations, are all false positives.
Yeah, it's all if thens. I mean, you said it earlier. I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
Are you guys doing anything with monitoring how enterprise applications within Office 365
That was operate? The part I wanted to bring up, actually. I remember I mentioned three things with 365, and like an idiot, I said,
because that's my hot button for 365. No one audits those things.
This, yes. The answer is yes. In fact, we have it set up too, so we get alerts. So there's a couple things I think this is going to be one of the worst attack vectors moving forward for.
And by worst, you mean best for the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. It goes as follows. For those that aren't familiar, whoever's watching, when you, by default, any user in 365, at least last time I looked personally myself, could say, hey, you know, we use HubSpot for CRM, right? I want to integrate HubSpot in my calendar or something. And so log in with your 365 creds and magic happens. It's integrated. Behind the scenes, you're literally giving that application whatever permissions it asks for up to your level of permissions. Mm-hmm. And so the by default, it is the most beautiful opportunity for socially engineering a bad enterprise app into an org that can touch all of their OneDrive stuff and you name it. And so that is a huge concern. So step one is you can definitely immediately set that so only admins can do it. And anytime someone asks, it emails all the admins. So that's like a free step you do instantly. We, through the 365 tool, do get alerts when these things, you know, in theory are added. But I think we saw that one with the kind of larger outfall of the SolarWinds attack. I think they leveraged some of that capability. And I just think it's just so ripe for really bad things to happen. Then you get in this whole game where you can start, you know, executing PowerShell back in the on-prem from the cloud stuff. And it can be a runaway train real quick. So I'm glad you brought that up because it is single-handedly one of my biggest fears right now. And I think 99% of companies or more would never catch it ever, if you ask me.
You want something else to make you crap your pants for a little while?
Yeah.
Take a non-global admin user and log into the Azure portal.
Oh, you're welcome. I've done that.
You're welcome.
Is it ugly?
You'd be surprised what a non-global admin can see in the Azure portal.
Oh.
Just so you know, there's a CA policy you can lock down. But again, it's not by default. You have to build those on your own.
Yeah.
But, you know, my question goes a little deeper in the sense, and maybe it's too new in its headlines for these applications. Are you guys doing any threat hunting against what applications in the environment do? See if they're stepping out of bounds?
We have on our own, not as part of our service. Just, I don't think we have to build a lot of automation for it to ever like make dollars and cents, but we have a lot. And I was actually shocked when I saw our own environment, you know, months and months ago when we were looking at this stuff. And I was like, damn, some of these apps ask for like a lot of here. I'll tell you one that's like was the worst. If you have an old school Synology NAS on-prem and you want to back up your 365, that thing can do anything it wants forever.
Yep. It gets global admin rights. QNAP.
Brutal. It is brutal. So we have looked at it. I don't think we've done any kind of, you know, kind of auditing like as a service, you know, people are paying us money to do it, but we have looked at ours and for some of our bigger customers where we're just trying to get like, guys, you need to get eyes on, we'll help you, we'll show you what to look at. We've looked at some of those and I'm always just blown away how many freaking apps are in there I've never heard of.
I wish Microsoft would have a tag that says this came with your tenants because they don't identify themselves properly. You can see an Outlook app and you don't know if it's Microsoft signed or if it's China signed.
I almost think Microsoft needs to have a little bit of the Apple model where it's like every single one of those apps, and maybe they claim to be doing it, doesn't seem to work, that is just going to the gnat's ass detail on an app and like, okay, this app is blessed for, you know, kind of.
What I'd like to see from a company like you guys is, because I know how expansive these applications can operate.
Yeah.
Is to really hone in on what they're doing with PowerShell.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
That I think would be a nice, easy target for you guys or someone like you to threat hunt because
it'd be super easy. And every time they used it,
why does a contact application or a scheduling application need to trigger a PowerShell out of certain bounds?
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good one. I know we'd see that.
I take royalties just so you know.
Yeah, we see it, that stuff live on the endpoint when it leverages it that way. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, that there's, it is a very open area. This is like, I think the security community and the MSPs, we need to wrap our head around it really fast because I think it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Well, what's going to get worse is we're seeing it, won't say who our vendor is, but we have a vendor that we leverage that their policy is any type of scripting you do leverages PowerShell, but it comes from the command prompt elevating itself into command or PowerShell exe through a commandlet.
Right.
And I'm like, please stop. Please.
Well, weren't they launching those commands from the services.exe?
Originally, yes. Yeah, so the agent, but it'll be a layered approach. And until you actually go in your EDR and look at it, it's the agent service launches a command as administrator, then launches PowerShell exe. And then that pipes in and it just creates a bunch of freaking noise in the EDR. And I'm like, you're secure. You tout yourself to be a security product, RMM tool, but this keeps happening. And your answer is to whitelist PowerShell? No, I got something on my backside you can kiss.
Yeah.
I think people need to understand that an RMM is not a security tool. It's a convenience tool.
It's a command and control. It's a C2.
But it's a convenience factor. It's nothing more. It gives the ability, it gives the MSP that extensibility to operate across 1,000 endpoints with one technician as opposed to 100 endpoints with one technician. Nothing on the market was built with security in mind.
I would agree. We see a lot. In fact, we can't really automate it because there's too many variables in it, but we've had to build an alert for folks that write custom scripts that they deploy via their RMM. And we kept seeing, because, you know, we were getting all the command line arguments and stuff. We kept seeing the, like,
are you getting plain text passwords?
Yep. And so it was like, oh my God, guys, no, stop this. Don't do this. So we've made, that's a formal alert now. Guys, we're seeing clear text passwords. You might want to, like, not do it this way, because any bad guy that gets on now, it's going to go look for that, turn on that extra auditing in the event logs and get it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of event logs, Eric, didn't you find a threat actor that was deleting the event logs?
Yeah, Re:Evil actually is now deleting event logs again. Yep. So we did one of the recent ones we got that we started going through, and CSO started seeing a bunch of deleted. They're not, it's actually saying deleted file, like the old NSA exploit where it actually would say deleted. It wouldn't be just purge the system. It's deleting the actual record, which is weird.
Yeah.
So you remember that old NSA tool where they would actually go in and start deleting those actual.
Probably lines? Wrote it.
John.
I'm not a dev. I'm not a dev. Yeah. It definitely event log manipulation's the thing in the bad guy world for sure. Yeah. We're kind of excited about this new thing we got just because it's just so push button to start getting all these event logs. Huh?
You got an easy button?
Well, it's kind of an easy button. This is our new logic project. So we're not selling it independently because we're afraid folks are going to try and claim this as, you know, the next thing to stop hackers. It's really geared at storing the data you need to check compliance boxes and then auto mapping the answers into a whole TurboTax like framework to say, because you have MDR, this requirement's checked for the following reason, because we're collecting file integrity, monitoring events, you know, this thing's checked. So the idea is you have MDR, your agents are out there, you press a button, and then it will be doing file integrity monitoring, Windows event log collection, and then depending on where you want it, you can also, say, start a syslog, you know, service so that you can capture that. And then it basically shits all that data in a real efficient, compressed way up to the cloud, and then we'll store it really cheap. And we're not charging events per second. And then the kind of final output is this UI that you can say, I need to be CMMC level 3. You click that button and everything we've been able to automatically fill out for you is already filled out. And then you can say, okay, here's the link to my phishing or, you know, awareness or security awareness training. And here's this. You press a button and then you have a final sheet that you can hand to an auditor. This is our attempt at trying to have a pragmatic mix of the MDR, the real security, and then orchestrating all that log collection. Because traditionally, if you don't do it that way, you got to go that SIM route, which we all know is kind of a runaway train and might be great for compliance, but it's hard to stop breaches in real time in those style platforms. It's just our opinion. Others will heavily disagree because they sell SIMs. But
how do you feel about CMMC in the MSP space? Because I know a lot of MSPs are going that way. Eric and I are, but we actually have clients that are going to require it from us whenever it goes into effect.
Anyone serving the government's going to have to deal with it one way or another.
And I think that there's a real need, and just based on what you just said, there's a real need for our tools to at least be able to map to CMMC.
Yes.
Maybe you won't be certified or what have you, but at least you'll know where you stand. And that's half the battle.
Well, that's it. Because most people never get a like formal audit to be certified. I mean, that almost never happens. So it's almost like I hire a company. They kind of bless me getting the documentation. We self-certify. We have our documentation. But like you just pulled the thread on our vision with this product, which is step one. Let's make all that data collection easy. Two,
off camera, I'll tell you how to monetize it.
Okay, cool. Well, we have our pricing model, so we'll see if it works. But but as we keep adding more integrations and more integrations, what we want to do is like we'll know, okay, our MDR covers this, our Snap agent covers this, our log collection covers this. Oh, you have Sentinel One? Cool. It's already integrated because we have an API integration that auto checks these boxes.
CrowdStrike?
Yeah. Or so we our plan is to do it with them this year. It's actually been kind of slow to get them to kind of respond on the API side. I would say you'll probably watch us do ATP Defender next. And then I would say, so CrowdStrike, like, and I just have our latest stats on AV breakdown across our customer base. You know, just from a pure like business standpoint, they're huge and really wildly successful upmarket. But in the MSP, it's like
they tiny, don't care. Tiny. I don't want to say they don't care about it. They understand how price sensitive MSPs are. And when you're dealing with the enterprise who consumes like the government does, you don't want to deal with the little guys who are going to haggle over a 25-cent discount.
Exactly. So, you know, I think right now we do Sophos, we do Webroot, we do Bitdefender.
Now, Bitdefender EDR, Gravity Zone, what is Bitdefender? Because there's it's like Microsoft. They got 1,000 SKUs.
Yeah. They're AV EDR. We're just hitting the API. So I think they deliver for either one of them. I haven't personally looked at the alert to say this is an EDR alert, but the whole intent of our deployment was support that. And then I think we have Malwarebytes coming out here soon. We finished the dev on that one. I will say,
Eric, I'll tell you, cancel that.
I know you had a bad experience, but from our testing, it actually caught a lot of stuff for what it's worth.
Well, I remember on our first call, you were impressed by Malwarebytes. But there was another product you were able to stop its communication back home.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about that, but
did they fix it? We won't say who it is, but did they fix it?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, you could probably do that same technique to every cloud-based tool on the market. The difference with that one was, I think it was a timing of like, so some of these EDRs collect a lot of data and some have the smarts on their agent to start doing. I think CrowdStrike is actually one of them that does it that way, if I'm remembering correctly. Others are more like, okay, it's signature based on the endpoint, all this other telemetry, we're going to batch it up and crap it up to the cloud. And then the cloud will chew on the data and generate an alert. What we found is, so any cloud-based one, clearly, if you can disrupt the DNS request or if it can't get home, you know, it's as good as whatever it has locally. But some batch it and send it in blobs. And it's just that little window of delay that I think opens that one up, because that tool that you're talking about actually caught the most stuff from what we've seen, but it did have a, you know, just a kind of a concept in there. But I would say most all of them are there's a few in there that are kind of like clearly have a lot of marketing, but what has caused bad guys to move so much live off the land is actually because AV's got good at catching their persistence techniques or this and that. Not all of them, but it just forced them like, well, we can't be so absurdly sloppy on our malware where all we have to do is just change a PE header and we're back in business again. Because that is where kind of I think ML does work a bit, and being able to say this is, looks like mostly the same damn binary as this other one. Where we don't see it work great is on all the specific in the weeds command line arguments and trade crafts. And we notice most of all EDRs are hard coded, like looking for a string or a parent child process, you know, that was created with a specific string. We see very little learning. That's us. I'm sure they'll come correct me, but I just haven't seen it. So it's been my experience.
All right. We're coming up on time here. So I do want to be mindful.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. This is fun. I had no idea what to expect. This is cool. I want to do more of that.
Do you want to tell people how to get in touch with you and your team over at Blackpoint?
Yeah.
Other than buying it through me and Eric, but you know.
So if you're interested to learn more, do a free trial, you know, do a little ransomware simulation tool, just go to blackpointcyber.com and you can set up a time immediately with, you know, one of our reps and sales engineers, and they'll do the dog and pony show.
Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.